From the Lynn de Grandier University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 19th day of December 2023. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson at agmarket.net. I'll remind you to pick up your tickets for the Illinois Farm Economics Summits. Those are coming up in Mount Vernon, East Peoria, and DeKalb on January 9, 10, and 11. We'll hear today from Dave Chatterton at Strategic Farm Marketing about the agricultural energies, and we'll try to relate all of these things back to what's happening in the Red Sea and the Panama Canal. Should be a good show. Stay with us on this Tuesday for the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Hey, just a quick reminder that you can pick your tickets up for the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. Again, that's January 9, 10, and 11. I'll be on the road with the ag economist from the University of Illinois in Mount Vernon and East Peoria and DeKalb. We hope that you will join us. All the details are at willag.org or on farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Now, this afternoon, we're going to talk about a different conference. It's a little bit later in the year. This one is in February on the 4th and the 5th. It's the agmarket.net conference. Kurt Kimmel is here along with our regular Tuesday analysts, Wayne Nelson, both from agmarket.net. Needed a little support, I think, Kurt, to talk about all the things that you guys have going on the 4th and the 5th in Nashville, Tennessee. This is a big event. Eric Snodgrass will be down there. Dan Bossi is coming in from Ag Resource Company. Some big names dropping in down there. And apparently, you all have decided to have an early bird special that gets extended into the holiday just a little bit, too. Can you tell me about this Nashville event?
Yeah, we're pretty excited about it. You hit a couple of the key speakers. We also have David Hightower, Joe Vakovic, and McKenzie's going to be there, too, and do a program also. We'll have Brian Burke. He's the president at JSA, and he'll give an outlook and introduce you to a little bit of the model forecasting they have. So it's a jam-packed, full event. Also, afterwards, we'd be more than happy to review some of these meetings down at Tootsie's. And if you don't like that, there's Gypsy Jane. She's down there on the strip, too. So we had quite a turnout last year. We've got quite a turnout going here. The partners and teams quite excited about it. So they are extending a little bit more time to sign up for this. They are offering that holiday special. Spouses are more than welcome. My spouse is going to be there, and we're looking forward to it if you could make this great event once again.
Yeah, Nashville's one of my favorite places to go. It's just so much fun there. And if you're putting this together with an event like the agmarket.net outlook on the 4th and the 5th, farming for profit, not price, I think it's a good deal. Agmarket.net if you want to sign up for that one. Hey, Kurt, thank you very much for updating us on that part of what agmarket.net's going on. Now, Wayne Nelson, let's talk a little bit about what happened in the marketplace today. I know you're watching closely, but we're in that holiday trade. With the exception that the market kind of moved a little bit, what happened?
Well, you know, we've got some technical selling and pressure from the favorable Brazil forecast. We had corn eased off today here. Beans took it a little harder. We were up yesterday on the idea of the Argentine tariffs would maybe make our beans a little more advantageous or a little cheaper priced in the world. Didn't seem to stick around much today with the attitude and with the weather forecast for some rain coming into parts of South America and sort of helping their crop a lot. Took us down the beans about 14 to 17 cents today. But, you know, we'll have to remit Kurt here a little bit. He forgot to mention Matt Bennett, our own favorite from WILL and whatever, too. And he does a really good speech also, so, and quite a presentation. So, but that way. But no, just it's holiday trade. It's very thin. We're moving the market because of more some political things that's going on in the world. And boy, you know, the big thing, a lot of the things with the, especially the beans, is going through the Panama Canal is just making it very hard. We can't ship grains through there because of the time and the expense that way. The Suez Canal and some of the others have been, you know, boats getting shot at, hit, and whatever. And it's going to you know, change the world and what they look at and where we're going to look at things because of freight costs.
Yeah, these pinch points, I think I can refer to them as that across the planet on the ocean freight. So there's the Suez Canal, the Panama Canal, a couple of places around on your way into Asia that are really pinch point. And of course, the Black Sea, too. All issues that we are dealing with in the commodity markets. And it feels a little bit like the potential for COVID and supply chain issues, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, that and then couple of the forecasters wrote out that El Nino weather conditions have peaked for the time period. That, of course, is what has kept it dry in South America. And if we peaked a little bit like that, it gives us a little tendency to think that we're coming back a little bit. You know, Michael Cordonnier, he dropped the Brazilian crop a couple million metric tons, but he raised the Argentine crop a million metric tons. But, you know, we're still above them on both of those quite a bit. That puts him at 155 and the USDA is at 161 and the Argentine crop there at 53 and we're at 55.
Hey, thanks much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Wayne Nelson. He is with AgMarket.net. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media each and every business day of the year. Find us online at willag.org, willag.org. And there you can sign up for the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. Those are in January. You know, one of the things we discussed during the Farm Assets Conference Friday of last week was the war and the spillover into the Red Sea of that war and how it might impact container ships, bulk commodity ships like corn, soybeans, oil as well. And that discussion point surrounded whether it might be a good or bad thing as it's related to commodities like corn, soybeans, being shipped through the Suez Canal if the United States military is more involved and more heavily guarding those particular ships. Illinois Corn Growers Association Colin Waters is a logistics specialist, and he took up the topic.
So all the attacks that are happening right now are coming from Yemen, and so it's at the south end of the Red Sea. So it's not in the Suez in Egypt, but they're apparently targeting ships that have are either destined for Israel or something like that. I guess I'm not really sure, but I believe that there's five different countries have bases in Djibouti. So that's across the strait from Yemen. So really almost within, you know, a missile range of Yemen, right? So it's U.S., France, I think China's got a new base there. There's a couple more. So there is a military presence there. And so it, on some level, it's a little bit surprising to me that they've been so aggressive. I don't know that there would be much of a competitive advantage for U.S. Vessels. On some level, this is a Plan C or Plan D effort for a lot of these shippers just to get something moving. Ideally, it's going to rain in Panama, and everything's back to normal for us. So, I don't know. I don't know that it answered the question appropriately, but maybe halfway.
Can I turn the question the other way? How much of a disadvantage is it for the United States by comparison to Brazil, Argentina, when the Panama Canal is in the shape it is?
Yeah, I think it's a... I don't have the numbers, off the top of my head, but it is fairly significant. The increased cost. It's not like, going through the Panama Canal is free or anything. There's fees that are associated with that, but it's a much shorter voyage from the Gulf over to those Asian markets. The Brazilians that'll be shipping basically across the Indian Ocean, they'll be okay, absent any sort of trouble in the Malacca Straits, and further on the other side of the Indian Ocean. So, yeah, it's this is potentially problematic for a while, too. And it's something that I don't know that it really hasn't been in the press all that much. We haven't really been talking about it a lot. But yeah, it's an issue.
Again, that was Colin Waters of the Illinois Corn Growers Association speaking at last Friday's Farm Assets Conference here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. He was asked to discuss the issues that are related to transiting the Suez Canal, the Red Sea, as it has to do with the Houthis attacking ships in that area. And then he moved on, because we had been talking about it, to discuss just transit across the whole of the ocean, and particularly the problems with drought and related issues through the Panama Canal. You may hear more from him next week right here on the Closing Market Report, as I'll bring you a larger piece of that discussion. On Tuesdays, we always check in on the agricultural energies, or at least most of the time. Dave Chatterton is here from Strategic Farm Marketing today to take up this part of the marketplace. Hi, Dave. Thanks for being with us. Happy holidays.
Same to you, Todd. It's always good to be with you. So I wish everyone the best for the holidays here, and I appreciate what you guys do all year long, and certainly the listeners and viewers who tune in.
Hey, thank you. You do a lot of work on this area. I want to start with the outside markets that are influencing what's happening in the energy segment. It might be best maybe to start with the macroeconomics and what the Federal Reserve did last week, saying, you know what, we're not going to move the interest rates, and we're likely to drop them three times in the coming year. What impact does that have?
Yeah, Todd, I think when you start at that macro level, when you talk about, you know, any market, but commodities in general, and particularly when we talk about the oil complex, money flow is a huge influence on whether trade is going up and down. And we've seen at times in the past where that money flow can kind of go in a direction that decouples a little bit, maybe from the underlying fundamentals of that marketplace. But when this outside capital comes into our markets, it has a tendency to just kind of overwhelm everything. And it's such a big flow. When you look at the value of the global, you know, equity and bond traditional financial portfolios versus what we are in commodities, you're talking about a multiplier of like 50 or 60 times. So, you know, a 10% shift in an attitude brings a lot of money into commodities. And what we've seen, I think, over the last week is, you know, a nice recovery off the recent low in the oil markets. That's primarily been a sentiment, you know, driven, you know, mechanism. And, you know, we'll talk about the Red Sea and what's going on there in a minute. But, you know, the sentiment now is that it's a risk on attitude. I think, you know, the global money managers feel better about not only the U.S., but the global economy heading into 2024. And when we look at the, you know, kind of the way that money has moved over the course of the year, we saw a record amount, some $7 trillion go into U.S. money market, you know, instruments and funds. And that essentially it was, you know, risk capital going into cash, taking advantage of a 5 or 5.5% rate on a short-term treasury or interest-bearing, you know, instrument and waiting for, you know, greener pastures, if you will. And I think that light has now turned from yellow back to maybe a pale green, and would suspect in 2024 we're going to see some of that $7 trillion work its way out. And I think oil has a story here to follow in terms of the global economy and in terms of what's going on in geopolitics that should grab, I think, some of that capital.
Now turn your attention, as you mentioned, to the Red Sea as it's relating to transiting the Suez Canal and container ships, oil not maybe going through the canal. This is spillover from the Hamas-Israel war with the Houthis working in the Red Sea to disrupt trade. How much of an issue might it be?
Yeah, Todd, it's one of those things where it's a little bit open-ended, and these geopolitics are always, you know, notoriously tough to predict the outcome. But, you know, right now I think there's some mild concern there that, you know, might border on moderate. We have seen a number of shipping companies, both containers and bulk, as well as oil shippers, say that they're not going to transit the region here, at least temporarily. We saw BP, you know, cut off their shipments through the Red Sea here this week. The region as a whole, I mean, you're talking about, you know, directly through the Red Sea or the Suez Canal, almost 7 million barrels per day of oil shipments. And then you've got another 2.5 million barrels that comes off of the Sahid pipeline that comes out near the Suez Canal as a transport point. So rough math, that's 10 to 12% of global, you know, crude supply on any given day. And so certainly it is an important inflection point for what's going on. And it's increasing, you know, transportation costs. It's making the logistics less, you know, efficient. And certainly something that has the potential to impact oil in a bullish way. Now, where it goes from here, good question. And of course, we saw the announcement yesterday that a U.S.-led coalition here is going to become the kind of the international police and send some more, you know, military assets to that, you know, part of the world to kind of bolster the shipping security in those channels. And, you know, it's just one more logistical hurdle when we look at, you know, very similar to what happened in the Black Sea. We've had our problems here in the Mississippi River. We've got the Panama Canal issues. And now we're looking at, you know, the Suez Canal and the Red Sea. So, you know, challenging, you know, logistical environment, I think, for a lot of commodities right now, and particularly including oil.
And for commodities, these things are all related, and they're also on the geopolitical stage related. For instance, the Hamas-Israel war in the Middle East would be consuming a lot of munitions, which may or may not have gone to the Black Sea. The Russians, the Houthis, others may be working in the Red Sea together. I'm not suggesting that they are, but it's a possibility. And there's just a lot that happens across the planet that can slow trade, commodities, and cause issues for everything going into the future. So is it that the upfront that supply shortages would push prices higher, and it's actually the ability to move the supplies, I suppose, rather than the shortage itself?
Yeah, I think it comes down to the fear of the unknown, and you did a good job of explaining it, Todd, in the sense that there's just a lot of moving pieces in this situation in a lot of different regions, and trying to figure out where that all goes. It's an unknown for the marketplace, and that unknown typically gets met with a bullish reaction. It's not so much that we're not producing enough crude, that OPEC doesn't have the spare capacity, but getting that crude where it needs to go and doing so in a timely and efficient manner is really, you know, everyone's used to this just-in-time inventory. And you look at our own SPR, and, you know, other countries around the world have brought their reserves down, except, you know, in a similar fashion. So not a lot of room for error when we start to get these types of, you know, of what look like smaller isolated events, but come in a way that disrupts trade. And like I said, it's happening in a number of different regions. We didn't talk about, we saw, you know, the U.S. Customs and Border Patrol close a couple of rail crossings here from Texas into Mexico this week. Again, what they deem a temporary closure. And that's, you know, gotten a lot of attention in the grain complex today, but it's also important for oil and for petroleum products that move back and forth across the border. So lots of different challenges on lots of different fronts. And I guess, you know, our message to our customers anyway, Todd, has been that we think the risk now in the oil complex and the fuel complex is probably skewed to the upside, in the sense that, you know, we've had a very long and deep correction. You go all the way back to, you know, the middle of the summer, and the market has been in a pretty sharp downtrend. And we had a nice recovery last week around the Fed meeting. And that, I think, general sentiment towards the global economy and the U.S. economy, combined with these geopolitical risks, really kind of, I think, is probably a base for support at these types of prices. Doesn't mean prices can't go lower, but I think that downside is a little bit limited, especially when we compare it to what could happen on the upside if we get one of these events that goes the wrong way.
So for at this point, you're suggesting then the producers who have not booked their spring needs wait.
Well, if you haven't booked now, you know, I think it's not too late. So we've moved, I mean, to, you know, roughly about, you know, $6 off the low in crude here, and about 10 to 12 cents in products. So keep that in mind as you go forward. But I think small corrections right now are pricing or buying opportunities, if you will. And it's the end of the year. There's a lot of things, you know, tax moves that are being made. Consider fuel when you're doing that. We, you know, the market hasn't gotten away from you at this particular point. And certainly, you know, we're looking at it. You know, if you go back and just use, you know, heating oil futures as a proxy, we were above 318 back as recently as September. We're now at about 270. So, you know, we've taken a decent chunk off. The lows in that market came at about just below 250. So, you know, relatively speaking, we're still within sight of the bottom, I think, or what will be probably the low. I think there's a seasonal factor at work here as well, where typically as we wind into last half November, December, we tend to see this diesel fuel market on a longer term seasonal basis bottom out and rally into Q1 and Q2. And there's no obviously no guarantee of that, Todd, but I think it's another thing to consider when you're talking about, you know, what the upside risk could be between now and spring.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Todd.
Dave Chatterton is with Strategic Farm Marketing. Let's check the weather forecast now with Don Day. A day weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Hello, Don. Thanks for being with us.
Good afternoon.
Tell me about the forecast in South America, please.
Well, there is going to be a little bit of an uptick in rainfall over the next 7 to 10 days down there. While there are still going to be some of the northern areas and central areas of the key growing regions getting below average precipitation, we do see an uptick in rainfall in the southern areas. So while this is not going to be enough rain to even up things, the prospects for rain are a little bit better heading into the new year.
After the new year, do you see any changes there?
I think we're still going to be fighting the El Nino pattern in South America throughout the course of the first month or two of 2024. El Nino is reaching its peak, and the El Nino pattern is starting to really show itself in the northern hemisphere like it did in the southern hemisphere this fall and early winter season. So I'm still concerned about dryness persisting, even though there's been a little bit of a better chance for rain in the short term. Long-term trends are still dry.
What are your expectations here in the United States over the next week as we head to Christmas?
Well, it's going to get busy. You know, right now, a large part of the nation's midsection enjoying some very mild temperatures. And we're going to go into the weekend, Christmas week next week, at least starting that way, mild, but wet. We're going to see a couple of storm systems come across the west into the plain states, producing, for the most part, rain in the Midwest, snow in the northern plains and snow in the Rockies. It'll be a white Christmas in parts of the west, but maybe a cool, wet period of weather between Christmas and New Year's in a lot of the central and eastern part of the U.S.
We'll talk with you next year.
Sounds good.
Don Day is with Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Speaking of next year, I hope you've signed up already, but if not, you still can for the Illinois Farm Economics Series. Look for IFAS on either willag.org or farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. The Farm Doc team will be on the road on January the 9th in Mount Vernon, the 10th in East Peoria. You can join us at each of those venues for half-day discussion with the agricultural economist from right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus at the University of Illinois. But you need to sign up right now. Don't wait until after the new year. The cost is $80, but it goes up fairly quickly after the new year, as we'll be traveling in that second full week. And we'd like to have you there with us in Mount Vernon, Peoria, and DeKalb. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online again, the same place you can get yourself registered for the IFAS series at willag.org. Our theme music was written, performed, and produced by Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.